See, just like me and my boys. I'm going to make them be Browns fans. If I'm going to hell, my sons are coming with me. It's the same thing with Andrew and the same thing with him and Kevin. By the way, Andrew Berry, he will talk to the media today at 10 a.m. Daryl Ryder joins us. Brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Daryl, I think one of the questions have to be asked is, I don't think it's unfair. What do you do to instill confidence in the fan base that questions the decision-making here that you've made over the last 4 or 5 years now?
Well, Ken, I appreciate the question. All I can do is allow the results to speak for themselves.
Well, the results haven't spoke for themselves very much.
No,
pretty quiet.
We're going to get a lot of "I appreciate the question" this morning, I have a feeling. I've got a list of about 15 questions. I'll be lucky to maybe get in three of them. There's a lot of questions that Andrew Berry needs to answer and be accountable for, especially when, you know, you and I and Anthony and everyone else can talk about the actual circumstances surrounding the decision to move on from Baker Mayfield. But when Browns fans watch the guy that got $230 million and the franchise gave up three NFL drafts to get here, and he can't be available on the field, and when he is on the field, he's the worst quarterback in the National Football League, while Baker's winning division titles with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers these days, like, that's just impossible for fans to understand why you would move on from that guy and bring in Watson. While I understand the organization doing it and the reasons behind it, fans don't. They don't get it. They just see what they see on television, and it's driving them crazy. So, there's... I don't think we're going to get a lot of explanation today. I think we're going to, like I said, we're going to get a lot of "I appreciate the question." We're going to get a lot of non-answers. And the most important thing that I'm really looking for from Andrew Berry, and it's something we rarely get with his media availabilities, it'd be nice to get some substance from him today.
What bothers me so much, and Daryl, this is the reason. I know he's staying. Okay. I want to believe. I want to have some confidence because, like, we had a caller earlier Lima got into it with, because he called it, guys, you know, defense wins championships. And, you know, everybody rolled their eyes in the room except me, because I'm going, no, this is what you say when you don't trust the people making the decisions because you don't want them to take a quarterback because you don't have faith that they're able to analyze that quarterback correctly.
Well, I don't want him taking a quarterback this year for that very specific reason.
Yeah, that's a very big problem. So I really want him to sell himself to me again.
So would you have said, Daryl, would you have said that last year? Let's just say we were further along with say it's the exact same situation as this year, only last year's quarterbacks were all available, three of which are thriving right now. Would you have said the same thing? I don't trust the GM, so we can't take a quarterback. You see how that can be a really, really big problem.
Yeah, no. Of course, I can see that it's a problem. I have lost faith in the decision-making process of this organization. They blew up an offense that didn't need to be blown up. You heard from players yesterday. Maybe building an offense around one dude is not the smartest thing to do. Maybe going away from the style of play that you built the personnel around isn't the smartest thing to do. And that's what they did. And they did exactly what I feared. And that was, they made a change that was completely unnecessary. They also overvalued the quality of the roster coming off a playoff season, which, let's be honest about it, and I don't want to disrespect or take away from what they accomplished in 2023, but I think there might have been a little bit of flukiness to that season. A lot of stuff went their way, even in the face of injuries and going through the volume of quarterbacks that they, you know, went through. But they won a lot of close games that they in other years would normally lose. So I feel like that the front office rested on their laurels a little bit and did not improve the roster. They just ran it back. They brought in Jerry Jeudy, but really, like, that was the big defensive change, or a big change, I should say, to the roster. I mean, they lost Anthony Walker, so, you know, they replaced him. But, like, as much as I like Andrew Berry and respect him, like, it's hard for me to sell to fans that he knows what he's doing and that he's the guy to entrust with finding the franchise quarterback that this organization has been looking for the last 26 years.
Daryl, what is the case for any of the higher-ups, including the head coach, to keep their job when you go from 11 wins to 3 wins?
Well, I think from Kevin's standpoint, the inconsistency in availability for quarterbacks is right there. Notice I'm not talking about performance outside of he did win Coach of the Year 2 times in 5 years, and they made the playoffs 2 times in 5 years, and he's the winningest coach since 1999. Let me rephrase. He's the winningest full-time coach since 1999 at a whopping 40-44. Greg Williams, interim coach, went 5-3. Nobody has sniffed that since. So, I mean, that really is it, right? The players didn't quit this year, right? You look at the Baltimore game. Defense is playing their heart out. They just were overmatched, and the offense is non-existent. It doesn't sound to me and appear to me that Kevin lost the locker room. I think Deshaun Watson lost the locker room. I think the organization and the decision that they made in firing Alex Van Pelt and bringing in Ken Dorsey, I think that lost the locker room. But I don't think Kevin Stefanski lost the locker room. Now, as far as Andrew Berry goes, I got nothing for you. He was brought in with a roster that was ready to win. He has spent a lot of money in the 5 years that he's been here. He's had 5 years to put a consistent winner on the field. He's had 5 years to find a franchise quarterback. He's done none of that.
Daryl Ryder, brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store.
All right, so we are going to sit here and debate for the next 100 days quarterback in the draft, or right. Kirk Cousins, or Aaron Rodgers. Daryl, it's very early. We're not going to hold you to this, but what would be your move as to who the starting quarterback should be for the Cleveland Browns next season?
Well, I'm not going to give you a specific veteran. I just say they're going to probably need to go the bridge route. And I'll do a deep dive here in the coming weeks into these quarterbacks. I haven't done it yet. I have read what a lot of the analysts, the folks that do the deep dives during college football season on these quarterbacks, and it's not that great what they're saying about this particular class. So I admit that's why I'm not real crazy about the idea of using the number 2 pick in the draft on a quarterback. I'd like to see them actually trade down and accumulate and get another first round pick for 2026 and just go ahead and get a little extra draft capital with that second overall pick, so that if 2025 goes south and you make a GM change, the new guy coming in can go ahead and hit the ground running with some additional draft capital. That's just where I'm at. Also, too, I do feel like they need to address the offensive line. They do need to address the defensive line. I'd like a meat and potatoes style draft here. And I don't feel like taking that approach, Anthony, is wasting a draft or wasting a year or punting on a draft either. Is it a safer bet than going drafting one of these quarterbacks? Yeah. The other thing, too, is, okay, let's say they draft Shador or they draft Cam Ward or they one of these kids, right? The question I would ask next is, do you trust this organization to be able to effectively develop said young quarterback? I think Kevin could, and I think that's where him hiring a quarterback coach could help. But there's just, let's be honest about it, guys, there's a lot here. It's hard for young quarterbacks in Cleveland for a variety of reasons, and they've had opportunities to develop guys, and they haven't. I'm not speaking specifically to this regime. I'm just speaking over the last 26 years. They've drafted a lot of quarterbacks and tried developing them, and this franchise just hasn't done it. And unfortunately, I don't think that there's a ready-made guy that's going to be out there that you bring in here and you can commit to, and this team is going to do what the Detroit Lions have done, and that is win 3 games 1 year, and the next year they're in the conference championship game. So I don't see that leap. No matter how much Andrew Berry is going to try and sell that today, no matter how much Kevin Stefanski tried to sell that yesterday, I just don't see that leap coming for the Cleveland Browns in 2025. And the number one reason for that, they don't have a quarterback.
Well, that's why I'm convinced. Daryl Ryder joining us. He's also one of the hosts of It's Always Game Day in Cleveland. Subscribe to the podcast now, 92.3thefan.com on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. It's sponsored locally by Smiley One and Bryant, Northeast Ohio's premier heating and cooling solution. Now, That's why I'm convinced, though, Daryl, that they will take a quarterback. Because if I, because honestly, if I go, hey, would you guys go 3-14 again in 2025?
Yeah.
If you're going to get Arch Manning, I'd be willing to bet a good 75% of the fan base would say absolutely.
I agree with you.
Okay, but I don't think that they can do that because it's like you guys are going to be around if you go 3-14 again. Like you can't just keep repeating this. Somebody's going to have to pay the fiddler for it.
Yeah.
For all in hell, for all I know, I mean, I get so crazy with my thoughts, Daryl. I go, well, yeah, let these guys take the losses. If you lose another year, let these guys take the losses. Bring in a new regime, have somebody that maybe the Manning family would be comfortable with, and then let's see where we can go from there. But that's crazy talk from a crazy person on a Monday morning.
I don't think it's crazy talk though.
So you think that that's maybe even a realistic possibility for the Browns?
Well, I don't know about possibility, but I've had those same thoughts. Like my
people think you're crazy.
Well, people think I'm crazy in general. I'm used to it.
Yeah.
But I mean, I have had those thoughts that, okay, again, meat and potatoes draft this year, see where the get that extra first round pick next year, load up the ammunition so that if you're not bad enough to have the number one pick, you can make it happen. And I would be willing to give up the 2027 first round pick to secure that number one pick next year as well, with under, I want to stress, under the assumption that the franchise quarterback is in waiting in next year's draft class. Like, I want to be very clear about
that. Of course.
But because that's the cost of doing business to get that kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm all for that. And then again, you know, and I wrote this in my Brownie Bites after whatever you want to call that thing that happened in Baltimore. You know, yes, so there needs to be accountability for this, and obviously the accountability ends up being Andy Dickerson, the offensive line coach, and Ken Dorsey, the offensive coordinator, and it appears that's where the accountability is going to stop. But those two folks are not the reason why this team won just three games. They are not the lone reason why. When you look at the fact that they just gave contract extensions to both Berry and Stefanski, the job right now I don't think is all that attractive because of just the Deshaun situation. So yeah, let's give. If I'm ownership, I totally understand why they would be thinking, hey, we committed to these guys. We have had some success with them. We've made the playoffs twice. And when we've had a couple of messy seasons, they've put it back together. So let's give them an opportunity to put this thing back together in 2025, and then after that, reassess where things are. And I think I will give ownership credit that because the impulsive decision, the emotional decision, is fire everybody. And the take a step back, take a deep breath. It's, you know, throw something against the wall, you know, whatever. But let's not fire the principals here. Let's give them a chance to dig out of this one more year. And then if they don't, then okay, you know, we'll be positioned in 2026 to turn it around with some, you know, fresh people in charge.
All right, quickly, lightning round of guys that will not be back next year. You tell me whether they'll be here or not be back here.
Oh, I love playing this game. Go ahead.
We'll start.
Especially 2 days after the season.
Sure.
Here we go.
Miles Garrett.
Yes, he'll be back.
Nick Chubb.
Yes.
I'm like, why can't he be Kareem Hunt next year? why can't?
All right. Greg Newsome.
Yes. But I don't think he gets a contract extension.
Okay.
Joel. He plays on the fifth year option.
Joel Bitonio.
Yes.
Ooh. I like that.
Wyatt Teller.
Yes.
Paul DiPodesta.
Unfortunately, yes.
Conklin.
That's one guy I would get rid of, by the way. Like, the results aren't there. You got a chief strategy officer.
I don't know what he's responsible for.
Me neither. And,
so, am I blaming him for something he's not responsible for?
Well, and I think he's got his hands in a lot more than we think that he has his hands in. But go ahead, Anthony. Who else you got?
Conklin.
Yes. He finished the season healthy. He looked good. Yeah.
All right.
He did look good, thank God.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
I think that's really it, right?
That's it.
The Wyatt Teller was one. I know there was the comment.
I think that they can extend him to lower his cap figure. I think he's played at a level that's worthy of an extension. Joel Bitonio he's just a class act, and he strikes me as a guy that, hey, I signed a contract. I'm going to fulfill the terms of the contract, play out my last year on that. They're going to, I think, go back to the wide zone scheme.
Well,
like, it felt like guys were crying for that yesterday. 20 seconds.
Will Deshaun Watson take snaps as a starting quarterback in 2025?
I hate to say it, but I think so.
Goodbye. We're done here.
I know.
Daryl Ryder, brought to you by Shiven Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Kenny Atkinson, your Cavaliers, 31-4. By the way, Doug Peterson just got canned.
When you said that,
Jags job is open.
I haven't seen a lot of Jags games this year.
You just assumed he was fired months ago.
Well, because he was the guy in the hot seat. First one fired, all the odds. And so anybody who put money on that has to be going crazy. How did they not fire him? How did they not get rid of him 3 months ago?
They say, I read a Jonathan Jones article, a lengthy article real quick. He apparently, Shad Khan, he still hasn't been an owner that long. They're like, he does not meddle as much as you would think a new owner would meddle.
I thought it was his son.
Gotta make a lot of mistakes.
I thought it was his son that was the meddler.
They don't talk about him. They talk about Shad Khan. I mean, he's the one signing all the checks. We're like, nah, he doesn't really get in the football stuff. But I know what his son is front and center. Wasn't he wearing the neck brace once last year during the draft?
Yeah,
because he had taken a DDT
or something like that.
Last
time I paid attention to any of that.
Tombstone or whatever it was. Yeah, he's a funny figure. We've had him on the air. We've had him on the show.
Oh, yeah, great guy.
Anywho, I want to get back to the Cavs here. Evan Mobley growing into his body finally. I've had this fight about Evan Mobley, and I'm kind of not wanting to give away what I can sell, but I'm going to say it. You know, Kobe Altman and the job he's done with the Cavs, it does make me throw it in neutral and just kind of coast for a minute about the Browns and some of the stuff, because I don't like it during a Browns season. We start to get into this big you-know-what contest of who can say the nastiest thing about the Browns, who can be the meanest about the Browns. I don't want any of that to bleed into the Cavs, or certainly not the Guardians. And I'm going, boy, you know, there was a time where I said, when we talked about Kobe Altman, and I'm going, I don't want Kobe Altman fired. What was it, the 11-day silence where we didn't know Kobe Altman was going to be here or not? And I was like, I don't want him to be fired because I don't know if I don't think Dan Gilbert's going to pick anybody better than him, which is not an endorsement. Not an endorsement. And he gets Evan Mobley, and I fought it out over the last 4 years about Evan Mobley and him being the unicorn and him being a great player because he was very slight. Well, he put on the 20 pounds. The 20 pounds looks like it's helped him a lot. Kenny Atkinson looks like he's helped him a lot. Evan Mobley, he's quiet, so I don't know if he's ever going to reach that status. It's like, man, he's kind of reaching the heights here as a player with this team the way that we wished a lot of other guys would kind of pan out. He's playing, you got to understand, he's playing exceedingly well.
Yeah, people have to go back.
He is a legit all-star.
And watch him against Orlando last year. I think there are very few examples of a guy that has looked like that. Remember, he struggled offensively against Orlando. They nearly lost that series. They were down like 20 points in Game 7 at home, and everybody was ready to run everybody out of town, not just Bickerstaff. Then the Boston series happened, and they were so wounded, but then Evan Mobley, if you remember, came alive. And it was against, you know, Horford. The series was over. At no point did you think the Cavs, you know, really had a chance in that series. But there was a little nugget there, little breadcrumb, and it was just watching Evan Mobley go to work. And it was like, okay, if he can do this, if he can show this kind of confidence, and he can build on that, like you said, transform his body, maybe some new coaching, some development, some very laser-focused skill development over the offseason, like the dribbling. Now we can start to put some of those moves together confidently. And then, of course, we've been talking about his three-point shot since day one. And you saw, you know, here and there last year, but there was no confidence in that stroke really the entire year. This has been one of the biggest leaps I've ever seen. Like I'm telling you.
It's not Klay Thompson, but it's
Kenny, this.
You think it's Klay Thompson-esque?
This guy,
because he was most improved.
This guy offensively, just go back to that Orlando series. He couldn't put the ball on the floor. He couldn't put multiple moves together. All he had was the pump fake. pump fake, pump fake, pump fake, pump fake, pump fake, pump fake. Okay, now I'll put it up. Like now, the reason he was pump faking so much is because he had no confidence. He had that explosion.
So what's changed with the confidence?
Well,
is it rotational?
I think it's also, it's year four, so he's going up against younger guys now. That always is a big factor. You're seeing a little bit of that with Garland, too. I mean, Garland's been amazing. He is looking like a top five point guard in the league. So I do think coaching is a big part of it, but I want to give him the credit. I don't want to just give Atkinson. Obviously, Atkinson's been amazing. But I don't want to do that at the expense of taking anything away from Evan Mobley. And it's been astonishing. The stuff he is doing, when we talk about unicorn stuff, it's not just, oh, I can victimize a dude on a closeout and then, you know, get around the rim and then still look shaky. No, he's going full speed ahead. And he's just going to be an impossible matchup as he continues to get better and understands where his strengths are on the floor, where his strong spots are.
It might be, and we're trying to find reasons for it. I don't need to look that far. I mean, if he's just 23 years old now and that's it, and he's just gotten bigger and stronger and has grown into his body. I mean, I know he's a 19-year-old taxpayer and an adult when he comes to the Cleveland Cavaliers, but we would call him a child. We would call him a kid. I would call anybody who's, if a kid was 19 years old working here, I'd call him a kid. And he's 23 now. He's bigger. He's stronger. He's faster. He might have just grown into his body, and it takes a while for some guys. We've known that he is a more of a meek figure, quiet again. Maybe it takes a minute for you to look in this league. Like, there are guys who come into the league and they are going to throw elbows and it's their league and they're going to take over. We call them Hall of Famers. And I don't know if he's going to end up like that, but damn, what he's done to grow this year with his type of game and finding his place, I think it's been inspiring. I think that's part of it. It's a big reason why you're 31-4 and why these fourth quarters, remember, he's playing in these games. They're not really playing guys a lot in the fourth quarter. These are blowouts. These are total assings. So I do feel that if they had better opponents, if there weren't these many blowouts, though, yeah, he'd probably even have better numbers than what
they'd
he has.
They'd all have better numbers.
Yeah.
That is the one thing that's amazing to me is that you have a superstar in Donovan Mitchell who could be out there getting his numbers and doesn't seem to care. I mean, he's rarely playing 30 minutes. I mean, this is crazy how many fourth quarters these guys have gotten to sit because they're bludgeoning their opponents. And they are a fun watch. Jared Allen has this quote about them playing ethical basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a fun thing for the NBA dorks that pay attention to this stuff. But they're such a likable team. They do play basketball the right way. They try hard. I know that's a low bar, right, in sports. They're getting paid a lot of money. But I watch other teams. I mean, look at what happens. Look at what happens in Miami. I mean, Jimmy Butler, that's been a team that's been to the NBA Finals and been, you know, a shot here or there away from being like the three NBA Finals, and they're miserable. These guys are happy. They know they have a lot to prove. They know that nobody's going to pick them to come out of the East. You might start to get a few talking heads here and there, but they know no one's going to pick them, and that's going to be a frequent question because what else is there to talk about with the Cavs right now? What else is there to talk about other than showdown Wednesday against Oklahoma City, and then how they measure up against Boston?
I can't endorse a trade of any significance whatsoever. The core four looks incredible. Like, I would advise against it. Like, I know that we had core four talk here and there.
Yeah.
But at this, I'm 31-4. You going to break that up? You going to mess with that? No.
The only question is what they're going to do with the tax apron and making sure they don't limit their opportunities to improve on the team over the next few years, as you're always going to need to.
They can mess around with a few things, but you're not messing with the core.
Yeah, I'm very interested because right now I've seen some people start to say, why aren't we getting our due? And my question is, do you care? Do you care about your due?
I don't.
Like Charles Barkley. And who was it on Inside the NBA the other day? They pretty much, they said, hey, Cavs have been great this year, but they dismissed them as true championship contenders. There will be some of that because Donovan Mitchell has not gotten to where a player of his caliber normally gets to by this stage of their career. Darius Garland has not been good in the playoffs. So, you know, nothing he does in a regular season is going to change certain people's minds on what that's going to be. And, you know, we have to see them. They struggled last year against Orlando, that young Orlando team that they should have had a much, much more should have been an easier route. Let's just say that. Should not have gone seven. So they haven't really done anything in the playoffs. And that was under Bickerstaff. The only thing that's going to get them credit is actually doing it in the playoffs. So nothing you do. Maybe if they do go 72-10, maybe they do that.
Well,
that'll change some minds. But
the
champs are the champs.
I'll finish it up with this. I know that this was something you wanted to bring up in the podcast tomorrow. And I will say, I think it's the type of team that could ruin the regular season for me if they were to go out and not finish well against Boston, but could save
the
regular
season. What if they lost
to the Knicks? Or, God forbid, it would ruin it because I'm one of the people who like, yo, regular season. I got to see what figures out. I got to see what matters. It could ruin the regular season for me. They're the type of team that could save the regular season for everybody else. Because if they go out there, and you mentioned Golden State, if they go out there and they do finish this thing off, like say they do complete it and they win the whole thing, I think the regular season matters again for a lot of people. Because it's like, well, wait a minute. We spent so much time bagging on regular season wins when the Cavs beat Golden State that it kind of murdered the regular season for a lot of fans, for the general populace out there. But if the Cavaliers team, this Cavaliers team is going to approach 60, they're going to approach the 66-win mark that they've already set.
Easily.
So that is going to be one of the more historic numbers that we've ever
seen.
They
could lose four in a row, and they'd still be...
I do think that if once we get to February and March, we're going to start sitting some guys and getting ready to then turn it back up for the home stretch. I know. But if they do approach that, and then they do go and complete it, I think it gives some heat back for the regular season.
This is What Was Wild Around the League. Sponsored by Wild Eagle Saloon. Locations in Broadview Heights, downtown, and Streetsboro. More details at wildeagle.com.
Well, you're about to get a slew of firings. What do they call this? Black Monday, Kenny, in the NFL. And Doug Peterson earlier today.
January 7th.
That's what some people call every day in their lives. We did get a firing quickly yesterday.
Hell of a Monday morning.
Immediately after the Patriots game, Gerard Mayo, one of their own, is gone. So the Patriots, of all teams, are going to have three coaches in 3 years. They defeated the Buffalo Bills yesterday, 23-16. And to me, what was wild about this game was you figured this was a quintessential tank job. The problem was the Bills didn't really seem to care about the game. Right? Did they have no chance, Owen, at the number one spot?
No, it'd been locked up. That's why nobody played for Kansas City.
Yeah, nobody played for Kansas City
That's
either.
That's one of the reasons why.
Which messed with the whole day. We'll get to that on what a garbage day yesterday was.
Bad day.
In the NFL. But yesterday, the Patriots win the game with Joe Milton III throwing 29 passes. He
Uncle Milton
threw for 241 yards, and they fired the coach. So yeah, my question was, they dropped. They could have had the number one overall pick. They instead end up dropping because of this to number three, right?
Four.
Oh, they're
right
four?
Though the picture I saw last night was four, but that could change. I don't know.
Is there a way they could have made sure that Mayo could not have won that game and crushed their draft hopes? Because some people in New England are fired up about winning that football game.
Good. I'm glad.
I don't want
them to have nice
I know you have been against tanking, but that seemed like a must-lose no-brainer.
I am against tanking in the sense of I just don't like to just for professional teams to come out and admit that they're losing. I will reap the rewards of it. Like, if they would have beat the Dolphins, I wouldn't have been mad that they beaten the Dolphins. I would have been mad that they beat the Ravens.
No, I would have been mad.
I would have been surprised, considering they've done what they could to not beat those teams. I would have been surprised about it, but I wouldn't have been mad about it. No, because, hell, I mean, all these calls we're getting, people don't want to take a quarterback. And I'm going, guys, the higher up you go, you're going to take a quarterback. Just get used to find one of the two quarterbacks, Shador Sanders or Cam Ward, and figure out which one you can be more comfortable with.
Or the higher you go, the more you get for trading down. Potentially.
Okay, sure. But they're going to take quarterback.
Do you think Vrabel is the guy for the New England Patriots?
Yeah. Yes. I think you remember when Freddie Kitchens got hired and people made a big deal that the Haslams were not on the podium when they made the hire, right? A lot of people noticed that Jonathan Kraft was not up there when Gerard Mayo was hired. And there is dissension within the ranks of that family right now. Between father and son and how to run a franchise.
It is fun watching them watch games. They always have the cameras on them during the games. You can read lips. Go ahead, Mitch.
Mitch's wild thing.
Well, staying in the AFC East, the Miami Dolphins season came to a close yesterday, losing to the Jets 32-20. And afterwards, Tariq Hill seemingly looking to take his talents out of South Beach, audio courtesy of Omar Kelly on X.
I just got to do what's best for me and my family, dog. If that's here or if that's wherever the case may be, man, I'm finna open that door for myself, dog. As I'm opening the door. Like, I'm out, bro. It was a great plan here, but, you know, at the end of the day, bro, I got to do what's best for my career and what's best because I'm too much of a competitor to be, you know, just.
Goodbye.
Well, when you think about
it. I'm not surprised by the honesty. Well, go back to Kansas City. Patrick Mahomes will get the best out of him, wouldn't he? What's the matter?
How good is Tyreek Hill right now?
Not as good as he once was, but he's as good once.
He had, as he ever was.
No, R.I.P. Like
he had 959 yards, only 6 touchdowns, and had like one big play early in the season. I think 80-yard play of some sort. And then that was it. It was none of the electric plays. So the question now is, what kind of team would even want Tyreek Hill? What kind of team? Because he still can be explosive. He just didn't show it really much this year.
Yeah, if he has a quarterback with a big arm, he's going to be fine. Because all they have to do is start as deep as they can, and he's going to run under it.
Mm-hmm. 30 years old.
That's usually when they do reach a certain line, but... Yeah, I think their window right now is closed. The Dolphins' window as currently compiled are closed. Now you have to figure out if Tua is... I know you just signed him, whether or not he's a long-term answer for you. I would say, in so many ways of the thought of, is he going to compete with Mahomes or Allen? No. Burrow, probably not. But is he going to be able to keep your head above water? Yeah, he's a good point guard. He's a good point guard quarterback.
Yeah, Tua played in 11 games this year.
Owen's wild thing.
All right, guys, it was Tampa Bay, it was New Orleans, it was on Fox yesterday, so I watched the whole thing. But it went a little crazy at the end because Mike Evans needed 5 yards to get to 1,000 and get a huge bonus. 2-minute warning, they come out of it. The Bucs have the ball. They've got a 2-point lead, I believe, at the time. 1-point lead, sorry, at the time. And they end up handing the ball off, going around the end, and instead of sliding down, taking the knee, and finishing the game there, they scored a touchdown, which was horrible because they gave New Orleans a chance to come back, but New Orleans couldn't do anything with it. So the Bucs got the ball with 36 seconds left, the division sewn up. You know, it's an 8-point game, so a pick 6 with a 2-point conversion could ruin your season, but 36 seconds left. Todd Bowles decided that he was going to go get that 1,000 yards for Mike Evans, help him get his $3 million bonus, and tie Jerry Rice. This is Todd Bowles after the game on what he was thinking.
He was awfully close. It was a matter of what kind of pass we were going to throw, and I didn't want an interception. We talked about screens and slants and knew they were going to double him and motion him over, getting him open, and did a good job getting him. He's earned it. He's done everything for this organization and this team, and we're happy for him. It was a sigh of relief that we didn't turn it over.
Was he looking up to the owner's box looking for the thumbs up or thumbs down on whether they should run this play and get Mike Evans the $3 million.
That's a huge incentive.
I mean, a lot of them. Cortland Sutton needed like 86 yards to get $500,000.
Yeah.
This is $3 million is huge.
What would Kyle Van Noy made like an extra $800,000 or something like that against the Browns.
I said that was all yesterday was about, were guys hitting their incentives. What would the Buccaneers have done had the Saints rolled over 7 guys to him?
You can't turn the ball over.
It's Baker. He leads the NFL in interceptions.
And that game was chippy.
He has 41 touchdowns, though. So.
That game was chippy the whole time.
Yeah, and Baker struggled until the fourth quarter where he was on it. He was awesome in the fourth quarter. Scrambles, dime throws in the end zones.
He was cussing people out.
Boy, I can't wait to see Baker in the playoffs. I cannot wait. Last year, he got,
Sunday
got
night.
A win. Ugh. I know.
I
know.
Wait all that time.
You can stay up for it?
Yeah, why not?
Kenny?
Ken's wild thing.
It was a bad night for Browns fans. You probably didn't even realize it because last night when Sam Darnold goes 18 of 41 for 166 yards and a 31-9 drubbing to a team that has lost everybody, They're playing Alex Karras right now. Alex Karras died years ago, guys. That's,
yeah, I know.
But he's a former Lion. Once a Lion, always a Lion. They're not giving up J.J. McCarthy. You're not making it. The people who said, well, maybe we could trade for J.J. Nope, you're not. I don't think they're giving up Sam Darnold. I would probably sign Sam Darnold to some sort of a nice contract and just hold on to J.J. McCarthy. Nothing says you need to move on from J.J. McCarthy or move to him. But last night was just like, yep, no one's getting fooled here. They're going to hold on to this guy. Has 166 yards when the lights are bright. Sunday night football, number one on the line. To have that type of performance, not very great. Jared Goff wasn't exactly overwhelming, but...
No, he was a good... In fact, he got the benefit of the doubt on what could have been a terrible intentional grounding. Mm-hmm. He had his issues. What does this mean, though? What if Darnold has another bad game in the playoffs? Are they open for business again?
Do I have to root for Sam Darnold to fail in the playoffs?
Because to get him.
Would I be open for business to bring him in?
Ponder that.
What Was Wild Around the League. Sponsored by Wild Eagle Saloon. Locations in Broadview Heights, downtown, and Streetsboro. More details at wildeagle.com.
Between a rock and a hard place.